Thanks, Brooke. We have a little bit of a more cozy meeting tonight. That's kind of fun. I guess that means happy holidays, right? Hope everybody's having a good holiday season. My name is Carrie. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in beautiful Bend, Oregon. I see a couple of the members of my home group in the room, which is awesome. And I'm currently living in the disciplines of steps 10, 11, and 12. So we left off on page 60 last week. I'm going to do my best to get through pre-3, step 3, and step 4 tonight. We will see how that goes because that's a big chunk. So that's the goal, but don't hold me to it. So here we go. After the ABCs, right? Which is where we left off last week on page 60, A, that we were alcoholic, could not manage our own lives. Sounds a little bit like step 1. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Sounds a little bit like step 2. And then that God could and would if he were sought. So, being convinced we were at step 3, I'm going to pause right there. This is the only step, and you know, the big book is so easy to read. I mean, every time we get to a new step, there's a little squiggly line that says, you know, we're at step 3, or this thought brings us to step 10, or step 11 suggests, and it's always, you know, in italics. So, we know where we are in the steps, right? The steps take about 103 pages of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, give or take. If your sponsor says that the steps start on page 30, then that's where they start. If your sponsor says that the steps start on the doctor's opinion, that's where they start. So for me, step 3 is a little confusing at first because it says here we were at step 3 in squiggly lines. And then if you flip 2 pages, 3 pages, on page 63, right above the middle of the page, it says we are now at step 3. It's like, wait a minute, why does it say it twice? I mean, what is all of this between the two? Well, I'm a big book literalist, and so I'm just going to read literally what it says. For me, everything between those two statements is pre-3. Why I call them pre-3 is because they're going to prepare me to take step 3, right? So underneath the third step prayer on page 63, it says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. So how do we think well before taking this step? How do I make sure I was ready? Well, that's why I'm given pre-3. So I'm going to go back to page 60. So, being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our lives over to God as we understood him, just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? Right? So, it's saying, I'm convinced. Okay, I've taken step 1. I'm convinced of step 2, which is that I can't by myself, right? No human power. So, now I'm convinced I'm at step 3, but what does that mean? That's where pre-3 comes in. It's gonna prepare us to take that step. So the next line is, and it just gives such clear-cut instruction. Well, the first requirement, notice how it doesn't say suggestion. The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So that's the first thing I have to understand, getting ready to take step 3, right? Getting entirely ready. On that basis, we're almost always in collision with somebody, something, or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. Now, on the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, not alcoholics, because our character defects, at least mine, are that of a human, not that of an alcoholic. I don't get to blame my shortcomings on, oh, I'm an alcoholic. No, I'm a human being, and I love the focus on human, my humanism here. So, as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits, right? So, what usually happens? Well, the show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself even more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be, right? Whether you fall on this side of things or this side of things. For me, I become demanding, and selfish and egotistical. That's what side of the things I fall on. But I have seen and I have worked with women who fall on the, the patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. But is it not the same character defect? Is it not the same self-seeking? Is it not the same fear? It is. And that's where it's gonna, that's what step four is for. So it's preparing us, right, to take step four. It's preparing us to take step three, to be rocketed into step four. So he becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is the basic of his trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well? Is it not evident to the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each one of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He's like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining about the state of the nation, the minister who sighs over the 20th century politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave, the outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever the protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, or our self-pity? So, for the next page, what I have been suggested to do to prepare myself to take step three is every time it says self, I put a box around that word, right? Whether it's self-pity, whether it's selfishness, self-centeredness, self-seeking, I put a box around every time this page says self. And that's going to help to prepare me, ideally, if I'm reading it in the I, focusing on myself and not you, it's going to prove something to me. It's going to prepare me to give my will and my life over to something that can manage it a lot better than I can. And that's the whole purpose of this, these pages that lead up to that third step. So, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on what? Self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So, our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Now, if that's not talking me into taking a third step, I don't know what is, right? Like, that's the threat of death right there. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and physical psychological convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we have reduced our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. That's frustrating. I mean, for I can do it myself, leave me alone, control freak of my type, that is frustrating. But it's been my experience that self doesn't fix self. I had to have God's help. So this is the how and the why of it. Remember the first paragraph of this reading right after the ABC is said, so what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? It's answering right here. So this is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Why didn't it work? Well, we just read 2 pages of why it didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone. There's that word, guys, remember, because we're building that arch, and we already had read so far. In this workshop about the foundation, right? Willing upon a foundation of complete willingness. We read about the two cornerstones. There's two places that say the cornerstones. I sent you guys out that little diagram, and now we're finally at the keystone, which is the stone that holds the whole arch together in the middle. So this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. So that is the how and the why of it. That is how I prepare. Now, in case I'm still not convinced, right? Because as this says, we had to be convinced, right? Just in case, if I read that, and what my suggestions are to my sponsees is we go through pre-three, they highlight, they circle all those, and then they go home and they start reading that on a daily basis for a couple of days, in the eye, right? I'll give an example. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that I think is the root of my problems, of my troubles, driven by 100 forms of self. Fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. See what I'm doing there? I'm changing it so that it's focused on me. And so now, just in case we're still not convinced and we need to that carrot to dangle before the horse, right? Dangle in front of the horse. They're going to give us the third step promises before we even take the third step, just to try to push us in that direction. So here's the third step promises. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. And more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Who knew? I didn't come here looking to see how I could contribute to life. I came here looking to see how I could stop puking on my shoes. And that's about it. But now, as we felt a new power, now remember, when we were powerless in the beginning, I told you guys that all the promises, and we read the second step promises, and now we're reading the third step promises, and the fifth step promises, we'll reiterate it. But all of these promises are how the new power starts flowing in, right? We're powerless, but we're gonna not stay that way. We're acquiring a new power. So as we felt the new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. Some of us call our sobriety anniversaries, a rebirth day. I choose not to do that for me. I'm not saying that it's bad or wrong for anybody else to do that, but I was not reborn the day I put the drink down. I guarantee you. The day I put the drink down, which is my sobriety date, I think that's when my real problems begun. Because if you take away alcohol from an alcoholic of my type, the problem's just gonna start. It's just gonna start. And I created more wreckage in my first year sober than I did my last year drunk. I was reborn when I got down on my knees with my sponsor and I repeated after her, like wedding vows, this prayer. Now, humor me. After we're to this point, after we've been through pre-three, it says now we were at step three. We were now at step three. So even though we were convinced we were at step three before, had to do a little bit of work to prepare. Now that I've prepared, now that I've done the work, and if you look, go down even further on the page, okay, up probably about 10 lines up from the bottom of the page, it says the wording, and it's talking about the third step prayer. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we express the idea of voicing it without reservation. So what my sponsor did, because we are literalists here, my sponsor said, you don't have to say the wording exactly the way it's written in the book. Why? Well, because the first sentence on page 63 is when we sincerely took such a position. If I'm sincerely talking to my higher power, to God as I understand him, I don't know about you, and it's fine if you do, but I don't use words like thou, thy, and wilt. Like, that's not my language. I'm not going to be sincere in that. And so I had to use my own language. I did not change the meaning of the prayer. My sponsor did not let me, but the wording was, of course, quite optional. So for me, she sent me home to not only go over pre-three over and over again in the eye, but she also sent me home to rewrite the wording of step three. Not to rewrite step three, to rewrite the wording of step three. So the wording to my prayer for the first time when I did this, and now I can say God. But I'm going to be honest with you, the wording was at first for me, I offer myself to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to build with me and to do with me whatever it will, relieving me of the bondage of self-will so that I might do AA's will better. Take away my difficulties that victory over them might be a witness to those I'll help with AA's power, AA's love, and AA's way of life. Do you see what I did? So I'm not going to change the prayer. I'm just changing the wording so that I can sincerely say it. Because I'll just admit, my first sponsor, she did not allow me to change the wording, and that's okay. And she was a great sponsor. But it took me probably 10 tries before I could get through this prayer without laughing. And she was not going to let me get up off my knees until I could get off my knees after saying the prayer without laughing. And I went through the motions, but I didn't take this step because it wasn't sincere. I didn't understand the thou, the wilt. I didn't understand the wording. And so after that, my first sponsor also had me saying the prayer daily, thinking that I'm doing a step three every day. Well, if I look at this wording, if I'm going to be a big book literalist, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. This is not something to be taken lightly. This is not something that I do when I roll out of bed and I go pee in the morning and before I make my coffee, I take steps one, two, and three. No, this was the biggest decision I've ever made in my entire life. And I've been married and I've been divorced and I've had a kid, and this is the biggest decision that I've ever made in my life. I only made this decision once. I've only taken this step once. These were wedding vows for me. Now, do I live in God's will 100% of the time? No. I take my will back every day, many times each day. That's why there's this 11th step, because it says many times each day, saying, Thy will, not mine, be done. I have to remind myself constantly with steps 10, 11, and 12, and the exact wording in those steps, the decision I made today. And if I screw up and I disrespect my husband, guess what? We don't have to get remarried tomorrow. I just have to remind myself that I have a loving and forgiving husband, just like I have a loving and forgiving higher power. And I've already made this decision, and I have not taken it back since that day I got up off my knees with my second sponsor. This is not something that I take lightly. This is a decision that I made that will hopefully be intact for the rest of my life. What I do about that decision on a daily basis through my maintenance and growth steps is up to me to decide. That's where the work comes in. So for me, that's when I was reborn. That's when my life started anew, because I was no longer in control of it. I gave my will and my life over to the power of, over to the care of something other than me. And at the time, yeah, it was Alcoholics Anonymous. No, that does not mean that it was a group of drunks. That means it was all three sides of the triangle, right? It means it was the fellowship, sponsorship, the big book, and service. But today that has evolved. It has evolved. And but I don't need to retake that step. I would never reduce that step to such small it was just the biggest decision I've ever made, and it was the best decision I've ever made. So with that, we found it desirable to take this step, this spiritual step, with an understanding person such as our wife, best friend, spiritual advisor, right? Spiritual advisor, what's that? A sponsor. That's what I did. I took mine with a sponsor. But it's better to meet God alone than with someone who might misunderstand. The wording, of course, was quite optional, so long as we expressed the idea of voicing it without reservation. So without reservation, that is pretty much another way of saying when we sincerely took such a position, right? I have to have no reservations. Reservations, Mr. Curtis used to say, is like when you make a reservation at the restaurant, you're expecting to be there. If I make these vows, right? And that's how we did it. We got down on our knees, and my sponsor had my version of this third step in her hand. And she told me to close her eyes, and she held my hands in one of her hands. And we were down on our knees, and I said, and I'm ready. And so she said the first line of my prayer, and I repeated after her, just like wedding vows. And I felt it. Right? I felt that I was making a decision, a life-altering and life-changing decision that day that I wasn't going to go back on. Now, I could, if I wanted to, I could decide that I want to start running the show. I want to take my will back. Screw it. I'm going to drink, whatever the case may be. But I haven't yet decided to do that. And I'm not saying that it's outside of my. I mean, it could happen someday, but so far I haven't seen fit to take this step again, because step 11's got my back like a Jan sport. Okay. So now we're gonna go to the next line, which on the bottom of 63 is next, highlight next, or circle it or underline it. We launched, highlight launched, or circle it or underline it, out on a course of vigorous action. The first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us have never attempted. Though our decision, what is our decision? That third step, right? The decision we made, the most important decision I had ever made in my life, was a vital and crucial step. It could have little permanent effect unless at once, highlight, underline, or circle at once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. How do I do that? Our liquor was but a symptom. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. So this paragraph is setting us up for step four. And notice how there's not a pause between step three or step four. In fact, it even gives us a time frame. It doesn't say a week, it doesn't say a month. It says, actually, it gives us two time frames. So you can pick anywhere between next or at once. That's when I get into my fourth step, right? And so for me, because I've seen people drink on their fourth step, I've seen people go into, a bad place on their fourth step. So for me, I give a limited time to the women that I'm taking through this work, to the women that trust me with their well-being, that have given me spiritual consent to be their guide. I don't take that lightly. And so what I do is before we launch out on that course of vigorous action with the fourth step, we make a date. We open up our calendar and we make a date for that fifth step. Because I don't want you sitting on that fourth step for very long, right? And this next part is going to explain why the fourth step doesn't take that long. So therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. How do you think we know that we're on step four? Is because of the squiggly lines that tell us that this is step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Okay. I can get down with that. I understand that. I've owned a company before. Okay. So taking a commercial inventory. Now, notice what it doesn't say. Okay. Because I've heard a lot of people in meetings talking about, oh, this fourth step is kicking my ass. This fourth step, I've been on it for 6 months. Oh, it's so painful. Oh, all the feelings, all the emotions. What am I doing? I can't go into my head. It's like a bad neighborhood. I shouldn't be going in alone. True. That's why what it doesn't say is it doesn't say that this is a feeling finding and emotion facing process. It says it's just a fact finding and fact facing process, right? No feelings, no emotions. We don't need to do that right now. That's what the fifth step is for when you're in the safety of your sponsor, right? When the fifth step says that we were prepared to for a long talk, that's because that's when we can process those feelings. That's when we can have some emotion. But for now, that can be dangerous if I'm trying to do that all by myself. And so this is nothing more than a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It's an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. And it's as easy as that. The one object is to disclose the damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of a business is going to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. So, what does that mean? Well, if we're doing the work at my house, we might go over to the, I don't know, the pantry. Okay, or if we're doing the work at my sponsee's house, it's always fun to watch their face when their sponsor goes into their medicine cabinet, right? We can do it with the medicine cabinet, we can do it with the pantry, but let's take some inventory, right? Like, look, we're looking for expired aspirin, or if we're doing this pantry, we're looking for, a box of cake mix that might have been in there for 4 years that a mouse chewed back through in the bottom of the box, and there's like cake mix coming out. That's a damaged or unsaleable good. We just put it in the no need it pile, right? We don't need that one, right? Then we take the next thing. It's a box of macaroni and cheese. I just bought it last week. My daughter only eats macaroni and cheese. It's brand new. It's not going to go to waste. This I can keep in the cupboard. I don't need to inventory it. I don't need to, look at it. It's still good, so it's going to stay in the cupboard. The next thing is a can of maybe pinto beans, right? Take a can of pinto beans out. Oh my gosh, the can is dented, and therefore now it's rusted, and the wrapper is coming off. And what I'm not going to do, I'm just going to set it aside. What I'm not going to do is look at it and go, oh my God, this is such a waste. I didn't even use a coupon on this. These pinto beans cost me full price and now they're rusted. And I don't even like pinto beans. What am I doing with pinto beans in my pantry? We don't even eat pinto beans. No, that'll make me drink. All I do is I set the pinto beans in the damaged or unsaleable good pile. And I move on to the next quickly, promptly, and without regret, right? I just move on to the next item. So that's, well, we did exactly the same thing. I'm reading back in the book again. We did exactly the same thing with our lives, right? We took stock honestly. First, we searched out for flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure, being convinced that self manifested in various ways. Why are we convinced that self did that? because of pre-3, because we read that whole thing in the eye, and I was convinced, right? I was convinced that self-manifested, it's in various ways, is what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations. So what does that mean? Well, now we have to look for common manifestations. And what that, another way of saying is the patterns, right? My patterns. What has been getting me into trouble my whole life? Well, there's going to be four parts of my inventory: resentments, fear, sex, and harms done. And why it starts with resentments is in the first line. So resentment is the number one offender. So we're going to do that first. Okay. Whatever's eating my lunch needs to come first. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it forms all sorts, from it stems all forms of spiritual disease. From what forms all sorts of spiritual disease? From alcoholism? No. The spiritual disease they're talking about here is not alcoholism. It's resentment. Resentment is the number one offender. It being resentment destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it, meaning resentment, stems all forms of spiritual disease. This has nothing to do with qualifying me as an alcoholic. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, which is alcoholism, in addition to alcoholism, right? We have been spiritually sick. Not because we're unique alcoholics, but because human beings have a spiritual malady. I am not unique in my spiritual malady because I have an allergy to alcohol. I am unique because I have an allergy to alcohol and obsession of the mind that makes me an alcoholic. It just so happens that the remedy to that is spiritual. The solution to my twofold illness is spiritual solution, spiritual remedy, and spiritual, there's three ways the big book puts it, answer, the spiritual answer. The answer is spiritual. The remedy is spiritual. The solution is spiritual. So when the spiritual malady is overcome, well, what happens? We straighten out mentally and physically because the answer to my alcoholism is my spiritual fitness. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. So this is so easy. First column, who done it, right? Who am I mad at? What's my hit list? You don't think you have any resentments? Okay, so you've never run into an a-hole in your whole life? Yeah, like that's your resentment list, right? It's your hit list. Who do you, when you're in the shower, who are you pretending to talk to? If you just got one good opportunity, right? To tell them how you feel. Those are the names that go on your list. So that's an easy list to make, right? Because we've been doing that. I mean, at least I have my whole life. So we listed people, institutions, or principles with which we were angry. That's your first column. Second column, we asked why we were angry. Well, that's easy. Right? Again, I've been doing those two things my whole life. She's a bitch, and this is why. Right? That's easy. That's not a difficult task for me. I can take your inventory better than anybody. That's all that this is asking me to do in the first and second column. So we asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found that it was our self-esteem, our pocketbook, our ambitions, or our personal relationships, including sex, which were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name of our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relation, which had been interfered with? We were usually as definite as this example. I love the example here. I'm not going to go through the whole Mr. Brown scenario. You guys have heard it. Mr. Brown needs his butt kicked, right? That's just the, that's the goal. That's definitely the what this is saying, and his poor wife. So Mr. Brown, like I'll do a couple of them, right? The cause, why I'm a resentful at Mr. Brown? Well, because his attention to my wife, right? He's flirting with my wife. And he told my wife about my mistress, the jerk. And Mr. Brown might even get my job at the office. So of course those are threatening my sex relations, my self-esteem. Him telling my wife about my mistress also affects my sex relations. So he's affecting my sex relations in two different ways because he is attracted to my wife and he's telling my wife about my mistress, all his fault, right? Yeah, right. So those three columns are really easy. For me, if I'm looking in this book and I understand what the outline is. So then we went back through our lives. Now that's it. That's some clear cut instruction there. It doesn't say we started at the beginning and worked our way up, like a timeline that you do in the treatment, center or whatever. Like, let's start when the first memory we have, and let's what happened, and did they drop you on the head in on your head, and were you abused, and all this stuff. No. We're going to go back through our life, like from right now. We're going to write down the major things that are eating my lunch today, right? And go back through my life, not start back and come up. To today. We're just gonna list the big stuff first, like the things that are eating my lunch today. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent is that the world and all of its people were often quite wrong. Now, to conclude that others were wrong is as far as most of us ever got, right? Because I've been taking this inventory, at least those first two columns, for my whole life. Like, they're wrong, and this is why. And I'm going to tell everybody about it. So that part of the inventory is not difficult for somebody like me. However, to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us, and we continued to stay sore. So sometimes it was remorse, and we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these things, do we squander the hours that might have been spent worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth, those are two highlights that separate the big book thumpers from the literalists. That whatever, it's both. They're maintenance and growth steps. You're both right. The maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. This business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns. So the insanity at this point has already maybe left, which is awesome, right? So the insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. That's a threat, a big book threat. There's promises and then there's threats. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for the alcoholic, these things are poison. And just like I was saying before, these character defects, they're not alcoholic defects. They're not, I'm not resentful and angry and, egomaniac or with an inferiority complex because I'm alcoholic. I have those things because I'm a human being. The difference is that for us, those are the dubious luxuries of normal men. Normal people who aren't alcoholic can have those character defects and they won't drink and die. The difference is I can't afford them because I'm an alcoholic. And so the insanity of alcohol will return and I will drink. And for us, to drink is to die. And so those are the dubious luxuries of normal people, but not for me. So we turned back to the list. That's our hit list, right? Our grudge list. For it held the key to our future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We begun to see that the world and its people really dominated us. So, an entirely different angle. One of the things that when I have like a when I'm having trouble putting like if I know your name goes on my first column and I know exactly what goes in my second column, but I'm having trouble seeing the third column and definitely the fourth column of what I've done wrong, like where I set the ball rolling, what toes I stepped on. I need to put myself in a position to look at something from an entirely different angle, right? So what I usually imagine is, okay, this person, this idiot on my first column who did XYZ to me, what if they are a sick person too, right? Page 67. What if they are, and we're not there yet, but we'll get there. What if they are a sick person too? And what if they're across the table from their sponsor in whatever 12-step fellowship they might end up needing, right? And my name is on their first column. What would their second column say? Fancied or real, right? Where did I set the ball rolling from their perspective? And that always helps me to shift my thinking and to see maybe what I did to set the ball rolling, maybe whose toes I stepped on, because I'm a toe stomper. I stomp on toes, right? And then when they retaliate, I want to be the victim. And I need to see my own patterns here. So this was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, like what I was just talking about. So though we didn't, this is on the top of page 67, though we didn't like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God. So every time it says ask God, I have the word ask, a little box around it, because that's a prayer. It's given me a prayer. It's offering me something to pray about. So it says, though we didn't, so we asked God to help us. What do you mean? I'm not supposed to pray for that other person? But I thought I heard in the rooms or some speaker meeting, maybe in the back of the book somewhere, it says that I'm supposed to pray for that other person for them to get everything that I would want for myself. Okay, well, if I'm supposed to pray to tell God what somebody else needs, good or bad, after I just agreed to quit playing God and to quit running the show, then my arrogant ass needs to go back to those pre-3 pages, right? Like, I don't get to tell God what somebody else needs, even if I have their best interest at heart. I can't do that anymore. I mean, I'll take and run with that. That's a slippery slope for a control freak like me. So, what this is telling me is to pray for myself where others can be helped, right? And we'll get to that again in step 11, because all of this is all repeated in steps 10, 11, and 12, which are my living steps. So we ask God to help us, and I have the word us circled, to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done. I don't get to tell you what my will is. I don't get to tell you who to help. I don't get to tell you I'm resentful at this person. Please make sure that they have all of the money, property, and prestige that I would want for myself. No. I get to let God do his job with that other person. And I'm going to ask God to help me to be loving and tolerant and kind and helpful to that person. So we avoid a retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chances of being helpful. And what is the whole purpose of this? To be of maximum usefulness to God and those about us. And so I don't want to destroy my chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people. That's important, right? We can love from a distance. Learn that in Al-Anon family groups. stay back there with your crazy. I can love you from here. But at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. So referring to our list again. All right. I don't have time because I only have 1 minute. So next week, now I'm behind. Next week I'm going to try to finish this, but there's so much good stuff in the fourth step. It's really hard to blow through, but I'm going to finish. I'm putting my bookmark in, and I promise I'll do better with getting through more pages next week. Back to you guys.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.